Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices.
Actions are going to be taken and nothing is happening. If they are saying that we need help, they said this last council meeting, and we were told there was going to be a meeting and that the men were going to be told how they were going to resolve the problem. I don't want to have what we have had in the past and some recent years from employees who feel like we're not listening to them. And they feel that way because nothing is being done.
Mr. Showers, I think you're incorrect, and so I would appreciate if you'd let this go to the department at my level.
Mayor, it's amazing that when I address the public, that's the only time you barge in.
I beg your pardon.
Anybody else can sit up at this desk and give their reason. I'm not
interrupting. Administration's
now
business.
You are interrupting.
You're interrupting administration's business, sir.
Well, then you ought to run the business.
Give me a chance.
Well, you've had a chance.
Mr. Showers.
Point of order.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mrs. Moon, if we could ask everyone speak.
Hang on 1 second, Mr. Showers.
Take them one at a time, please.
Yes. Mr. Showers, you have the floor, sir, and then the mayor will have the floor.
Now, last week, the mayor was 2 weeks ago. She was here. Nothing has been done. Now, if you want these men to strike as a union, this is the same thing that happened down at Water Pollution Control. Men came forward, told us about the problems after problems. We hid the problems. We covered up problems. Nothing was done until it got out of hand. We don't need that to happen in this sanitation division. I mean, we continue to have the same problems over and over. We make these nice statements that everything is going well, and yet the men who we have hired to do the job is suffering. These men have come here 2 weeks in a row saying that they need help. And we make statements at the council meeting that we're going to go back and meet with the men, and yet they are back here tonight saying nothing has been done. And then I get chastened and interrupted when I say that we need to do something about it. If there's a problem down there, we need to fix it. Because if you don't fix it, you haven't seen anything yet. Men are tired of being forced. Men are human, just like you and I that sit up here. These men are not going to continue to take the kinds of things that we are doing. We don't need to go back to this kind of action with employees. We've come from that, and we don't need to go back. These men, and just a few of them are here tonight, they deserve the same opportunities to be heard and to address their concerns as anybody else. And I hear you tonight, and we have an opportunity to give you relief. I hope that you will get relief. It's an agony to see men working without help. It's an agony to see men with tasks that have been increased, and yet they are made to work in a decreasing manner without help. You're not given the equipment. You haven't enough trucks to do jobs. You're taking trucks off. Men are not coming in. They are not coming in. And when they are out, these men are being made to work double time, overtime, to drive the trucks out without help. And that's not fair. Now, they're coming here asking for help. We need them.
Thank you, Mr. Showers. Mayor, you have the floor.
I think he said more than enough, and he has undermined a department head, and I don't appreciate it.
But do your job.
I thought
then you quit being so uppity and
order.
Smart about it if you're
That's
so good
enough.
At it.
That's enough.
No, it isn't.
That is enough.
I don't have to take his back talk anymore.
Well, Mayor, it's just as fair for me to respond as it
Mr.
is
Showers.
For you.
We're here.
Let us talk.
You ladies, I apologize to you that we don't normally act this way. And I apologize to you to come and see a council doing something like this. He's agitating those folks to strike, and she's upset about it, and she, rightfully so. And the only thing I say is if you have a job and you don't like the job, quit the job. If you don't like the job, quit it.
Glenn, if it's left up to you, you will fire them all.
That is enough. I am calling for order right now, or people will be escorted out of this chamber on both sides of this dais. Now, I expect the administration and the appropriate department heads to work this out with Mr. Showers and the department.
Not with Mr. Showers, with the department.
And at that point, I'm going to terminate discussion on this, and we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda.
Well, in this episode of the Grassroots Mouthpiece, I talk with Robert Avery, Sr. of Gadsden, Alabama, about the current state of Alabama politics. I will be asking him about the political climate and grassroots health in the Gadsden as well as Anniston areas. Good morning, Mr. Avery. How's it going?
Good morning to you. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm just trying to see from the last councilman we had who really challenged the mayor on things when they went a little rogue compared to the shucking and jiving and cooning we got going on downtown Huntsville right now. What did you think about that conversation right there? We all know what uppity means.
I was just listening and laughing, and maybe I shouldn't be because I've heard that before. I was called a little bit worse than being uppity, but the added a few more adjectives.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Can you believe that we have these type of things and people in these positions, like a mayor who feels like they can say this to people and get away with it? Not just a mayor, but a lot of people in a lot of positions do this same thing.
Call that drum major syndrome.
Mm.
And people who of the other persuasion, the other color, I'll put it, have that drum major syndrome, that they're in charge, and no matter what you say or what you do, it's going to be their way. But they're in charge. They're the head. And that's why we have the issues even of today. But until we have people like Showers who's continuously fired back or stand up, we're going to forever be under that drum major.
Uh-huh.
And black folk need to wake up and realize that until we come together, and I need to emphasize that again, until we come together, then we're going to forever be under the leadership of the drum major.
Mm. That's so very true. And that's the thing about me is what I've been talking about is one of the issues over here in Huntsville, Alabama, is the way the whole process went about of selecting this judge. I mean, they went out of their way to appoint this judge who is severely flawed. This guy has no business overseeing a multi-million-dollar clerk of the court fund. That's money collected from taxpayers who have encountered the system in some type of way. I mean, isn't there certain judicial canons on how can somebody terrible in their personal finances, who would elevate a person like that to oversee multi-million dollars worth of taxpayers' money, unless they're trying to get their hands on some of it. And he's going to play some kind of role of a fall guy. If I was him, knowing my financial situation was as bad as it was, I wouldn't want to be over that fund. You know, not because I don't trust myself, even though that is temptation. It just looks bad. And somebody could do something, and he could end up being a fall guy. When the money disappeared, they're going to be like, well, okay, this guy here, look at his financial situation. He was the one the most desperate.
What you got to look at again, it goes back to the drum major. The drum major points to whoever he wants whoever he wants to play. He doesn't necessarily pick the best trumpet player, but he picks the trumpet player he wants to play.
Yeah.
And give him that solo. And give him that solo. Let me just bring it. You know, it has nothing to do with anything, but I'm in charge, and this is who I'm going to put there, whether he's the best solo blower in the band or not. Let me tell you how we went down a bad road, and it started years ago. Because, you know, I've been out here on this battlefield for a long time, mm-hmm. and I've been able to analyze and see some things. And if I was the drum major, things would have been a whole lot different. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're afraid to let us be the drum major and get in those positions. Let's go back to when Ronald Reagan was president.
Mm-hmm.
The air traffic controllers went on strike. And I was a big union guy. I worked at Goodyear, so I was in the union. And he fired those union workers because they went on strike. Mm-hmm. Every union in this country should have went on a 24-hour strike. And that would have stopped all of that. Let's bring it to today. My boy down in Dallas, Jerry Jones, is threatening to bench every player who kneels or set for the national anthem.
Yeah.
If every black player in the NFL this coming Sunday would sit or kneel, you wouldn't have any more discussion.
And the reason why we're not going to have it.
Because we're not together.
We're not together. We're not organized. And another thing is we got to face this too as African-Americans. We do have some African-Americans. Once they reach a certain level, they do not care about the community. They are not going to do anything to rock the boat, to interrupt that money flow. These players are trying to get to the money. They're trying to get to the money. That's all they want. They want to run that ball. They want to dribble that ball. And you got a few like LeBron James and Steph Curry who will step up. And like Kaepernick, you know his stuff. This was not a stunt. You see how they try to classify it as a stunt? Who would turn down millions of dollars as a stunt? You would have to have a deep belief in what you're standing for to risk poverty or to risk not being able to do your craft in the field that's supposed to be done. He did not do this for no stunt. Nobody's going to stunt knowing that you're going to be losing millions of dollars. He was moved by what was happening in this country.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying. How if all of the players throughout the NFL, black players, would sit down on Sunday, there would be no games. But you wouldn't have enough people mm-hmm. on the field or on the team to play a game. That was some.
And if they sat down, a lot of you. And if they sat down, if black people collectively did that, if all those, that's just an empty threat. All those black players should kneel anyway. They should do it not for themselves, not for their doggone paycheck. They should do it for the African American community and all those who are against police brutality. They should do it because you know what's going to happen? If he benched all of them, you think Dallas going to win? If he benched all the black people to sit down, they can chalk that game up as a loss. And every other team in the NFL,
just,
too. But they're not going to do it. We don't have strong enough. We'll have a few
point.
That probably will. Yeah.
But somewhere or another, we've got to put principle over anything else. And our man over anything else.
True.
I saw something posted on Facebook, and I'm not sure the exact wording, but it pretty much said, can you believe in 2017, as when we first got here, we had somebody trying to dictate what black men's do or slaves do in the field, and in 2017, we still got a white man trying to tell black men what to do on the field.
Yeah.
And threatened. So we got some serious issues here. And until mm-hmm. again, I get back to the fact that until we come together as a people, we're going to forever have these issues. What good is having money? And I think several of the players would tell it and would testify to it. They got all the money. They don't have all the money in the world, but they got all the money they need, millions and millions of dollars. They get stopped by police officers who don't recognize them, of course. They're just another boy. And so what good is your money if you're just another boy to the authorities or to the drum major until he recognizes, he says, oh, this boy got a few dollars, so maybe I need to lighten up. But you're still a boy to them. So when are we going to stand up and start being men? And that's the question.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Yeah, and
that is what we talk.
That's true. And, it's the same. What makes it so bad, what makes the situation so dire, is these are basically, I mean, you know, people have been sitting back watching us entertain them for years. They even when a man would have, just like when they showed that on, what was that, the movie with Django or something like that. I don't know if they showed it in that movie, but it was in the movie.
Django.
You know, just, you know, it was good. If I was white, you come here from out of town, I got a show for you. These two black people are going to fight to the death as we get our drink on. They've always been entertaining them all the way up into, like, death. It's for that mentality of the Roman arena that they brought to America.
That's right.
It was that same type of mentality. They wasn't using gladiators. They was using pitting black slaves against each other. So we came up in a climate trained to be against each other. And you get back to the house Negro and field Negro syndrome. We've always been trained to be in competition and be against each other. And then,
well,
you know, when that played out and ran out and we had some unity in the 60s, we was trying to get together. Next, first thing they did was infiltrate it and try to destroy it. Then they came at us with the welfare and public housing and abortion. I tell people all the time, abortion, yeah, you know, it's a deep conversation about the rights, and it needs to be looked at the rights of both creators instead of just a woman's body. Yes, it is a woman's body, but we need to get real and realize that the one person is not the creator. And see, when they did that, to us with the abortion. I tell people, had it not been for the abortion coming onto the scene, America would be black right now, basically. It'd be black right now. But all those abortions, they should have been with the other person. But not just having them out of wedlock and moving on. But if we had not bought into the Margaret Sangers and all this abortion stuff, we would be melanated right now. We wouldn't be having this problem. And the frustration we see right now is, even though with the abortion, they still see America and the world going back like it was. As it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end. The world is turning back dark, and you see these frustrations by these races. You know, it's their last gasp for air. They feel like they have to do it now.
Man, look, you can't keep saying that, man. You get them folks nervous even more. So.
hey, you know what I told them? I said, I'm not against you. I tell people, I'm not against you. Biology's against you. Not me. Don't blame it on biology.
But
now we start to understand these laws. Now we understand these old laws about not marrying. You know what I'm saying? They knew back then. You know, they knew back then about the melanin. So that's why they enacted laws. It was looked upon bad, you know.
Absolutely.
So we know what's going on. We know what's going on.
If you can't beat them, turn them into
welfare recipients or turn them into homosexuals, have the woman and man at each other's throat, break down the family, feed them all this bad food. People don't understand. It's a very, very intricate plan that we're going up against, and we run around here fighting with each other.
Why do you think Trump and that group are trying their best to deport every Hispanic person in this country, no matter what, whether they're here legal or illegal? And we don't want the Muslims coming in from those countries where their skin is a lot darker than his skin. again, like you say, they can see. They sit there and think about that and study this. They realize, America, like you say, the world is browning. So this is my last. This is my last white hope. Trump is the last white hope, and this is why they're fighting so. And this is why everybody up there who looks like him are quiet when they know what he's doing is wrong and against the our American values. But they understand the fact that they're looking at their survival. So they ain't going to say a word about Trump running Hispanic people off or keeping Muslims out of this country or the police killing black men. Because the more they do that, the better chance they have of surviving a little bit longer, because they know, like you said, the Bible says it will be in like it was in the beginning. So that's my spiel on that. So we'll leave that.
And if they want some science behind that, then you can only think they pretty much not accept it. I mean, they lied for years and tried to dig up evidence all these other places. They looked all over Europe, and you get to 10,000 years, you get back to 10,000 years ago, you can't find. But you can go back hundreds of thousands of years everywhere else and find other peoples of the world. They understand the fact that it is going back like it was. But that's nothing to fear, because everybody came from one source anyway. They came from the African ancestors. You ought to be glad to get back to where you were and get this dilution out. But when it comes to how does it look down there in the Gaston, Anniston area? Are people getting mobilized in the grassroots and getting excited about this upcoming special election and next year? Or are the Democrats and all of us included, I say us because we tend to do Democratic things, are all of us sitting on our behinds too long? Should we be doing more? That's my question. What's being done, and should we be doing more?
We should be doing more. No matter how much we're doing, we need to be doing more. We got some things coming up next month, of course. We have such a short memory, so we decided we're going to concentrate over the last 30 days prior to the election to try to motivate people. We've got this campaign, Vote or Die, campaign that's kicked off of our mistake. And people need to know the importance of this upcoming special election. If we can make a change, and I don't know where we got to that point where we figured our vote don't count. And that's been hammered at some of us so long, and I run across a bunch of young folks. Well, my vote don't count. Well, you're absolutely correct. If you don't vote, it don't count. And look what happened to us when we didn't go vote presidential election. And you're talking about, on the average of 10,000 votes in several states, we would have had a different outcome. So people can't, and I try to tell people, your vote counts. The only time your vote don't count is when you don't go vote. We can't count. But you can make a difference.
And see, in a Democratic, just like when it comes to these elections, this is what I look at it. We're not specializing in using technology and these millennials in the right way. Because you just look at the way the Republicans do. They're out when it comes to running a digitized campaign or having a digital component to your campaign, they're outspending us 20-1. We have really got to step our game up. You know, that's just the outs 20-1 since January of this year. But overall, they outspend us 3-1 when it comes to digital. It's some things that we haven't really tapped into. It's like when Barack Obama ran, we had all the tech people out there. I mean, it was so much coming. It was like an avalanche. They couldn't stop it. And it seemed like after Obama, it seemed like we relaxed on the social media. And I didn't see really the enthusiasm out there for Hillary Clinton. And like you said, I'm a member of a lot of groups. And I had this, I have this debate with them all the time. I don't want to hear that my vote don't count crap. That's crap. this the situation we in, we need every tool in the toolkit, and getting your behind up and going down there and voting and motivating someone else to vote, that's one of the tools. Why would you be in a fight like this and say, well, I'm not going to use that? You use every one of them. If you want to protest and it's your job to go out there and spread people about the history of your culture, do that too. That's part of it too. But just don't be writing off voting. That's what I dislike about some of the Afrocentric groups that I'm affiliated with, is that voting part. Because I tell them, you can even go research Malcolm. Malcolm, at the end of his life, he was talking about we need to be more involved and organized into politics. So how can you sit up here and say not to participate in it?
I do a lot of speaking to young people, and I try to emphasize to them, and I try to bring it home to them, and I try to put it down on their level. You know, in our time, we have a curfew. And I tell the young folks, I say, you know, how many of you are aware you got a curfew? Very few of them are aware. One or two who's gotten into trouble realizes it. And
yeah.
I say, you know, I say, the reason we have that curfew is because your elected officials impose that curfew. And when I let them know that there is a curfew and they can be arrested, they say, that ain't fair. Well,
yeah,
it might not be fair, but guess what? Your parents and the few of them who, when I get to the high schools and talk to them about it, the few of you all who are in here 18, you need to go to the polls and vote. And some of you are going to be 18 by the next election. You need to be sure you go to the polls and vote if you got an issue with that. Because
I tell people too. Even if you have been incarcerated and you do not have voting rights reestablished yet, what you can do, you can educate yourself about these issues, because I've ran into a lot of people who very much concerned about these issues, but they can't vote. You know what I tell them? At least convince three people to go vote for you. Go get three people you know that have never voted who can vote and tell them this is what you care about. You'll take them to go vote that day, or can you ride with them to go witness them vote? You know what I'm saying? If you can't vote, get yourself out there and encourage at least three people to go out there and vote. Okay, hold on. We got a caller. Let's check this caller out. Caller, you on the line? Are you listening? You want something to say, or you just listening?
It's both, Marcus. Hello, everyone.
Okay.
Listen, this is Deborah. I'm in agreement with that we need to teach our children when they're young. I know my son has been was going out with me since he was 3 years old to political functions, helping with campaigns, that by the time he came for his 18th birthday, he had a voting party for all his friends that were either 18 or was going to be 18 in time that they could vote. And I thought that was awesome. We fixed food. I explained to them about their rights for voting and everything, the rights that they have. What bothers me is that sometimes we are our worst enemies. I've talked to people that say, I don't vote. It doesn't make a difference. But you're right. Every vote counts. And then I talk to people that say their religious views, they don't vote. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense, because even if you go to the word, you see, well, there are things that even the Lord says, render to Caesar what is Caesar's, or, you know, the situation says, who do you choose, Jesus or Barabbas? I mean, people had to vote. And no matter what religion or denomination you are, your leadership is voted in. And so I listen to how so many times we as a people have been brainwashed, and then we sit up and complain because we don't take the responsibility to do. And like you said, even if you have a background where your voting rights have been taken, you can get out there, advocate, get people to the polls, convince people why they should vote, and do what you can to be a part of the process. But I know when I had decided at one point to run for governor, I heard more from my people, why are you going to do that? They don't want you up there. And some of the backstabbing I got came from my people. And I said, why can't we support each other? And it hurts. But the thing is that we can make a difference. You know, when people fought and lost their lives so we have the right to vote. We have forgotten. They fought and lost their lives because they had nothing, and they were fighting for rights, not just for blacks, as Congressman John Lewis says, but for equality for everybody. And people lost their lives for that. And now we've got a little something and have forgotten how far we have come and why and how far we still need to go. And so we sit back and say, my vote doesn't count, or nothing is going to change anyway. Nothing is going to change anyway. And that makes us more harm to ourselves.
Yeah, it makes us weak. I mean, they were telling me in this group, they were like, we don't participate in the system. I said, then how'd you get over here? You bought gas. There's a bottle of water right there you're drinking. You are participating in the system, you know,
well, don't
already.
Don't you know that?
You're bankrolling.
If you're
gonna talk, every time you buy something, you're bankrolling the system.
That's it. If you're going to talk about blacks, look at everything, whether it's hot curling irons, the street lights. We even contributed to the making of the Statue of Liberty. There is so much history that we can teach that goes beyond Harriet Tubman and Martin Luther King or Nat Turner. I mean, we're talking inventions, plasma, things like that, that we can be so proud about. And if you don't vote, if you don't participate in the process, you lose out. You don't just lose out because of who's in office. You lose out because your history becomes forgotten.
True.
You know, if I can chime in, Mark. You know,
no, go ahead.
She's absolutely correct. She's absolutely correct. You know, and we just got to keep hammering. You know, I when she was talking about her children, you know, my kids, well, from the time they were able to walk, they were able to go to the polls with us and mark the ballots when we used to. Back in the day, or pull the lever when we had those old machines. I'd let them pull the lever and let them know which one I wanted to pull. And so they participated in the process. So I never had a problem with them when they became of age. And my grandchildren, it was a family outing to go to the polls to vote. You know, when my kids was in school, we wouldn't go vote till they got out of school. When my grandkids came along, My kids and my grandkids, we would all go to the polls the same, you know, when they got out of school. And so you make it a habit. And my grandkids don't, you know, are off in school, and they were voting absentee because they had that habit of voting. They knew that was the importance of it. And so we just got to re-educate our children and re-educate our people when it comes down to the importance of that vote. I came along when black folks couldn't vote. You know, I was one of those foot soldiers who was out there knocking on doors trying to get people registered, whose life was threatened. You know, here in Alabama and over in Mississippi, to try to get people. So I know the importance of it, and I keep hammering it everywhere I go that we've got to go to the polls. That's the only change. The two things that people respect, and I know there's a lot of background noise there. I'm not sure where it's coming from.
Yeah, Deborah, you got a little background noise.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me walk. Hold up.
Mute your phone, just mute your phone.
Yeah. But you know what? That was old school, so we're probably around the same age. That's old school when we did that with kids. There is a picture somewhere of me holding my grandmother's hand at the March on Washington, and I was a little girl, and I remember asking her what this was about, and that's when she started me with her dealing with in the political system and equalities and all that, and it always stuck with me. So then I was ready to teach my son the importance of it. The problem is, you know, we don't do that. That's just like people used to tell the story, their history, and we don't even do that anymore. All we know is what the books say and what you see in the movies. And it's our responsibility to educate our kids and our people. But what I don't like, and Marcus and I have had this conversation, I don't like it when we get mamby-pamby politicians. We get you in there, and then you flip the switch, and you tell me you're my leader, but you don't represent me the way that I need you to represent me. And that bothers me very bad, because then we have people that are following you who's going to believe everything you say instead of researching and searching for themselves.
Well,
because
we don't know
the process.
Again, it goes back to education. I do a lot of, like I said, public speaking on high school, college campuses, and even to elementary schools. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of reading and learning and listening for yourself and being able to analyze and analytically come to a conclusion. Don't take my word for it. Don't take John's word for it. Don't take Sue's word for it. But, you know, read and do the research yourself, and then you can come to hopefully conclusion that best suits you. And I try to tell people, you have to be selfish when it comes down to issues. You have to be mindful of what's important to you. And if you can be selfish about what's important to you, and you want to make sure whoever you're supporting and voting for have some like ideals like you, then we can make this world better. When people are striving to be good and to do what's best for themselves and what's best for everybody else, because I can't remember the quote, but I'm not an island of my own. I got to live in this world. So therefore, if I'm not comfortable and Sue is not comfortable, we both got a problem. So I got to make sure whatever I strive for is not only going to help me, but it's going to help John, Sue, and Sally, and everybody else. And that's what I try to tell young folks when you start looking at things. You got to be selfish, but at the same time, you got to make sure that selfishness is not just self. It's about being comfortable with your surroundings and everybody who are with you. One of the other things the young lady was talking about brought back some memories when she was talking about going to the march on Washington, and your grandmother held your hand. Well, hopefully, if you held one of those signs. I was one of the individuals who put those signs together, because I was there at the march in 63, along with you, your grandmother, and all the other 200-some thousand people. And it's obvious it's made an impact on you. And so that's why we've got to keep teaching and keep preaching to our young folk. Everywhere I go, every group I come in contact, I try to make an impact on them about what has happened. Because if you forget your past, I want you to hear this. If you forget where you come from, if you forget where you come from, you're going to have a hard problem going to someplace else, because you're going to repeat some of those same old things. And that's what's happening to us now. They've taken the history. They've taken the past out of our books at school. And the average child now, if you walk up to them right now and ask them about things that happened in Alabama, about Wallace standing in the schoolhouse door. They don't know anything about that. It ain't in the school.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because when the movie about Malcolm X came out some years ago, everybody was walking around with a Malcolm X hats and T-shirts, and my son wanted a hat. And I said, for what? What do you know about Malcolm? He had gone to see the movie. And he said, I know. I said, honey, that's the movies. What do you know? What have you read? What have you studied? Don't go by what you saw in the movies. And I said, so I'm not buying you that hat or that shirt, because you don't even know what the struggle was about, and I'm not doing that. But, you know, you made a good point. What I tell people is, if you don't know where you came from, you don't know where you're going. And that's part of the problem with our people, too. And when I say our people, I'm talking about people in general. It doesn't even matter. If you don't truly know your history, you don't know what your future can be. With my son, he comes from a rich background on both sides. And I sat him at the feet of my aunt, who is now deceased, to learn the history of the Barrows, which is a rich history. Then I sat him at the feet of foot of his grandfather to learn the history of the Smiths, and my son is the fourth, and why that name was so powerful and took all the way back to Africa and all that, because I wanted him to know you are a prince being trained to be a king. So you must act, walk, talk, and accordingly. And I expect nothing less of you than that. And but, you know, we really don't put that into our children, that you are who you based on your experiences and your past and what you choose to be and where you're going and how much effort. My son, I remember when he started walking with his pants hanging down, I told him three times, I said, pull him up. Do you know where that history is with that neck? And I gave it to him. And then I carried a belt, and he was preteen. I carried a belt in my purse. If I see you out in public, I'm going to pop you on your butt to pull them pants up. He didn't believe me. He didn't believe me. And you know what? And three times I had to show him I meant business. I didn't beat him. I just stung his tail, pulled them pants up. I understand expression. I understand that. But the history of this is not okay. I had to teach him what a hero was. I had to tell him the people in his life that were heroes, not the basketball, the football players. Let me show you what a real hero is. But how many times do we as parents do that for our children? We really don't. And our children are who we are. You know, they,
let me say this right here. And Deborah, you probably know this. From seeing and being around school children, I see some kids with $200 shoes on, and then the next minute, their folks fussing about a report card full of D's. What they walking around with $200 shoes for, and they got a report card full of D's? It's just, it's a distraction. Those kids they wanted to fit in with everybody else, so their parent tried to fit them in with everybody else by buying that crap. Now, I just believe like Dr. Clark, John Henry Clark, when he said, those who reject their ancestors will be rejected by their offspring, and that is true.
That's true. Well, my son didn't have $200 shoes. I told him, this is my responsibility as a parent. And I'm not putting you in $200 shoes, and I can't put it on my feet. But I would also tell my son what the rules were. And he'd say, well, my friends, they don't have to do it at their house. Go tell them that's their mamas to come live with us, and they'll do it at this house. I can't tell you what's going on at somebody else's house. But at my house, this is how the rules are. And since you're not old enough to work and pay bills, but soon as my son was able to work, then he had to learn how to budget. I had to teach him those things, and I had to tell him now, you know, this is what you're going to do. But this is what I'm excited about, guys. My son and daughter-in-law just gave me the most smartest, gorgeous, healthiest little baby boy in the world. And I told my son, it's amazing, because now you're going to see how smart your mommy was, because, honey, you got a child now. And that's all, and I think it's funny. And I think it's funny because he's getting ready to learn some hard lessons of being a parent.
Well, it makes a difference as to how you do your children as they're growing up. And I was just sitting there thinking, you know, my son and daughter now is 40. Doggone, I'm getting old. I got one that's 40. What are they, 49 and 48 now?
Yeah,
they're 49 and 48.
Uh-huh. About the same age as me, 47.
Yeah, and they just had birthdays. I think I counted right. But anyway, when they were coming along, we didn't do the fad stuff. I mean, you know, whatever the fad was, that's just tough. You know, this is what mom and dad are going to get. Okay, and now they've got, my daughter has 25-year-old twins who now have children, but her twins didn't get the fad stuff. When they were coming along and going off to school and everything, you know. And now they've got children of their own, and it's going to be interesting to see, because of this, the way the world is now, about all this having the Jordans and the whatever. I'm just going to see hopefully I'll be around long enough to see what my great-grandkids, when they get old enough to start asking for stuff like that, to see how my grandchildren do, because they didn't do it. They didn't get it because their parents said, you know, when you get that, you'll be buying it for yourself. Right now, I'm buying it, and this is what you're going to get. And that's what we pass down to our children. That's what they pass down to their children. So it's going to be interesting to see how their children react with everything that's going on around. But I thought that was real, real interesting.
Yes,
well, yeah,
it was.
That's interesting because I blame my generation, the baby boomers, for this. We struggled. I've been working since I was 12. We struggled. We did. We went through. Our parents struggled, and most of us came out okay. But then, not me, but some of us got older, and we decided we wanted our kids to have better, not realizing that we had the necessities. The families were closer. We did more. But we looked at the negative and not the positive, and we wanted our kids to have better. And in that trek and wanting our kids to have better, we have forgotten women, teacher girls, how to clean, take care of kids, how to cook, how to bake, how to work on cars. Men, teach your young men how to use their hands. Teach them that education is necessity. We forgot all the core things that we were taught. And I remember when my son started dating, I said, son, a lot of girls today can't clean. They don't know how to cook. And if you should fall in love with a woman that can, I do not want to hear you say, you can't cook. My mother cooks better. I've taught you how to cook. And if you have to be the cook, you come home from work and get in there and cook and teach your wife. I said, because, honey, a lot of these girls today, they can't. They don't know how to do those things. But then what I did with my son, I paired him up, even though his daddy was in the house, I paired him up with positive role model men. Let's teach you how to work on cars. Let's teach you computers. Let's teach you how to use your hands to fix things. Because I told him he was going to be educated, but not an educated fool. And I blame the baby boomers. I blame us for this because we're raising a bunch of kids that can't do anything. And in Huntsville, they don't even take books anymore to school. They got computers, laptops. And I had a teacher tell me one time that they were creating kids with no common sense. So
well,
now,
wow.
Okay, they said these kids don't have common sense, and we're adding to that because they can get on there, they can know all of that, but what else are they doing? They're not learning critical thinking skills. They're not doing the things that we had to do when we went through school because it's all on the computers and the questions and the answers are right there. And you look at your kids, some of your kids today, and I just think we're in a crisis when it comes to our young people.
And the thing about that is the problem I see in the grassroots, what I deal with, and Deborah, you probably can know about this, and Robert, you probably see this too in that area. Maybe not to the same level that we have here in Huntsville, but in Huntsville, we do have a bunch of extremely talented grassroots people. But the problem with that is, number one, none of them wants to work together. That's number one. Just like just for the show. Number one, they don't want to work with each other. Number two, you have 8 out of 10 of them who they're just doing it all for show, and they're not going to offend anybody. I don't care if it's a righteous cause. If they see that it might offend someone in power, then don't say nothing. And my message to them is just get out of the grassroots. I mean, why are you doing this grassroots stuff? You're going to be scared to speak truth to power. The grassroots is no place to be scared to speak truth to power. It is exactly where you do it.
Well,
that's true. There's a lot of fear.
There's a lot of fear and a lot of greed, too, because some. And then when they're not going to say nothing. These people in the grassroots trying to act like community leaders, they're useless and basically in the way.
Well, Margaret, I'm a firm believer is that you got to keep preaching. You can't give up. I've been out here on this road a long, long time. A long time. And as a matter of fact, hopefully my book will be coming out real soon. After 55 years out here on the road, knocking on doors, trying to get people registered, get people to vote, and tell them the importance of voting. And hopefully, you know, people like you, my children who come along, and Deb's children, and Deb herself, because she's a little bit younger, but she's got some folks out there. We just got to keep preaching, and we just got to keep teaching. And I'm a firm believer, and I have to believe that eventually things are going to change, and we're going to come back together again. The thing that really destroyed us. I'm sorry.
I was just going to tell y'all, I appreciate you and Deborah and the things that y'all do here. And I've talked to a couple of other people. And then that's why I wanted to have you back on the show and like having you on the show. It was because I go through a lot just wanting to do this. It's just been so many times. And here recently, too, I just want to get up. I just want to say, excuse my language, I just want to say, if these Negroes do not care about themselves, then why am I putting my ass on the line? When I hear from people like Deborah and I hear from people like Robert, it gives me a little bit more encouragement to keep on fighting. But I'm telling you, it's hard. I feel like I've been played so many times. It's gotten bad recently. I think about it. We're giving it all up. Just do what they're going to do.
It is rough out there. And the people that are out here not doing it for the right reasons and making wrong decisions and votes and whatnot, but their followers, look at them because they have that swagger with their communications. They say what they want to hear. We know that to be true because look at your president. But when you have people like us, Marcus, that are out there fighting a good fight, and I tell people, matter of fact, I told someone, the Johnny Cashin, some of the other folks, the James Dawsons that had no problem speaking up are gone, and they're leaving one by one. And I was telling someone, I feel like the only one out here right now is Marcus Echols and I, and we take a beating for it, and people either love us or hate us, but we understand that you cannot not have a voice. Your voice is your power. I am not afraid. I told somebody, excuse the scenario, but I told somebody my shoulders are wide, and every day I put on my big girl drawers. And so you're not going to scare me. And if people died for me and they were not afraid, who am I to sit back and keep my mouth shut and be afraid? People say, well, you got to be careful. Careful of what? Because my voice is my power. My book is my power. And if you come at me, you better bring it. You better bring it. Because I'm sick and tired. If the people aren't dying out, they're scared. And, you know, we need these people to stand up. We need help. I told both people, I said, Marcus can't do it by himself. Sir, you can't do it by yourself. I can't do it by myself. So if you're going to sit down and be quiet, then go sit in a corner and be quiet. Because I know I have a big mouth, so we're going to get out there and do what we have to do. But the thing is that you get these older people, and I'm not talking about you, sir, but there are people that are older in leadership. And instead of them start mentoring and training folks to come up and take over when they sit down, they won't do it. They don't want you to come and do it. Old dogs don't give up. They die. And then what happens is, and now you don't have what you need to step up with their voice and with their action and their leadership. You don't have them there to step up because they didn't train anybody or mentor.
That's right. Well, let me say this, and then I'm going to – I know we're getting close to time. Our time is all – we're all going out anyway. But
– yeah, we're good on the time. We got as much time as you need. My shows, for everybody out there listening, all my listeners, my shows have went from the customary 45 minutes to 2 hours. So you hang with us as long as you're able.
And we already appreciate it because you've already stayed the amount of time you usually stay, an hour. But we got basically another hour and 5 or 6 minutes. So you can get all the points out that you want. And just let me say this right here before you chime in, Robert. Deborah, you know as well as I do that, you know, with us, there is no fear. And I've been told that too, you know, be careful, be careful. I said, well, I don't have anything to be careful about. I'm walking and living in the light. What you talking about? I'm a light being. What am I afraid of? There's no darkness out there with something sinister that I'm afraid of, because I am exactly like Malcolm. Like you said, you better bring it. And just like what Malcolm said, I'm a man who believes that he died 20 years ago and a man that lives like he's dead already. I don't fear anyone or anything whatsoever.
Well, you know, that's been my philosophy ever since I was a teenager. Like I said, back in the days during the Civil Rights Movement, I lost the fear of fear, if there's any such thing. And, you know, I don't care about what people say about me or what people think about me. And I tell my children and I tell people when I meet them, I say, I've got to answer to just one individual. I've just got to answer to one individual. So I don't care what you say. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you do. When I meet my maker, and that's the that I've got to deal with. So whatever you want to do to me, whatever you want to say about me, and whatever you think about me, that's your problem. As long as I know who I am and whose I am.
And whose I am. That's right.
There you go. I don't worry about all this other stuff.
Well, you know what I say is, how you think about me is your business, and I make it my business, not forgetting your business. So take it elsewhere, because I'm not interested. But, gentlemen, I have to go. Believe it or not, I'm at work. Marcus, I'll see you Sunday at the wedding.
Thank you for calling in. Okay.
Mr. Robert,
I
look forward to shaking your hand.
Hopefully we'll do that real soon.
Okay. See you Sunday, Marcus.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Brother Marcus, I'm gonna throw a bomb, and then I'm going to have to leave, too.
That's good. We've had a great conversation, and like I've always told you, you're always welcome on this show, and we need to use the show. If you know anybody that can do anything to further the causes that you believe in, that I believe in, please direct them to this show. And I got a spot for you whenever you get the time. You need to do the Robert Avery show. You have your own guests. Have some of those people in guests in Aniston. And let's get this thing moving across this state, because I see a few people excited, but I'm not just seeing a party-wide excitement, and that's kind of troubling.
I meet with a group of folks that I think we probably all need to sit down and get with you, pick a time to come up to Huntsville and sit around and, as old boys say, chew the fat and see what we can come up with.
Yeah.
But let me say this before I leave, though. And I hate to put it on you and then leave you, but the problem I see in the black community today, and even in the white community, because they set it up for us. Back in the day, I was talking to, like I said, I've been in Detroit for the last few days, and I was talking to a group, and they were talking about the churches and how can we get back together. The preachers, and we were all together back during the Civil Rights Movement. And I told him, I said, the problem is now you've got these big mega churches where these guys have 10, 15, 20, 25,000 members. And there is no communication. There is no whatever it is. And it's all about the money. When we get back, when our preachers get back to saving souls, and when our preachers get back to building communities and keeping families together and making this country a better country and making the moral decisions instead of worrying about their money and their payroll and whatever else they're doing, well, we're going to never have a problem. And I think you pretty much said it early on. You know, we've gone away from God. We've gone away from our basics. And
yeah.
Until we can come back to that, then we're going to forever be divided and have problems. So our leadership is the problem. The leadership is the problem. And right now we got a lot of weak leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts in the pulpit on down. And
that's
I'm going to leave
true.
That alone and let you take the call.
All right. I appreciate you calling in. And look forward to having you on again.
I look forward to being on again. And like I say, probably be calling you the next day or two to try to set a meeting up so we can all get together and sit down and talk, okay?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot.
Again, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power.
To the rap, hip hop.
Bringing voices to power.